In 3, 2, 1.
We convince by our presence. If you are looking for a roadmap and techniques to boost your confidence, make an amazing first impression, finesse your sales pitch, and up-level your communication and relationship skills, then you're going to enjoy my conversation with author, speaker, and sales and presence expert, Amy Rezac. Well, hi, Amy. Welcome to the podcast. We're delighted to have you as our guest to talk about sales and presence.
Hi, Michael. I'm happy to be here.
Now, Amy, we have to ask, I was really attracted to your topic, sales and presence, because I've been involved with sales and sales training for 2 to 3 decades, and I know you've been a sales executive with organizations, and then you came to a point in time where you said, hey, I'm going to go do some training and corporate training, and your organization, SMP, does that. When did you first discover that presence really was the key to sales results and better success in the marketplace?
I discovered it probably about my first year into sales. Knowing that I needed to learn on the fly a bit. I don't know if any salespeople out there can relate to that, learning your product on the fly, learning how to do things on the fly. I was really new to everything. And so I leaned into just being curious of who was in the room, what was happening. But I had already kind of dabbled in that my entire life.
Sure.
Growing up, I was really shy. My mom would always tell me that we'd leave a room and then I'd ask thousands of questions about what was happening. Why were people standing that way? Why were they dressed this way? So I've always monitored a room, if you will. And then during my kind of success, 1 to 2 years in is when I really started utilizing it.
Okay. So you started to observe the room and the dynamics in the room. So you're looking at verbal and nonverbal cues, I'm assuming, and you're seeing what's going on. Now, Walt Whitman said, we convince by our presence. So finding our presence enhances our connections and the communication that we have. How do you define presence?
I define it by being present, actually.
Excellent.
I think the more that we can be present in getting out of our own head, the more we can learn about other people, the more we can stay curious. And then it becomes natural to have conversations with people. We're not so stuck in what we're trying to say or what we're trying to get to of our end goal. We can really work on that little by little. That can help with conversations and success along the way.
So it's that mindfulness. It's knowing your product, your service, so that you can actually focus on the room. I know as a speaker, when you're on stage, you've already got your talk. You're not really thinking about your words because you know your content. It's like the song. So you're looking at how you come across to the audience. You're looking at how am I being received and observing your presence and that environment. Is that how it works for you?
It's completely how it works for me.
Excellent.
Yes. Yeah. I watch for if people are engaged, when they get disengaged. What did I just say when they disengaged?
Right.
Where do I need to redirect all of those things?
Right. Where the glossy eyes over and
yes.
go from there. Sure. Well, presence is an interesting topic and we know it when we feel it. Mm-hmm. We know it when we see it, but it's defining it. We know what it looks like when it's not there. All right.
Right.
But how much of an advantage does presence and working on our presence give you in today's world, do you think?
I think gives you 100% advantage. When we're talking about moving sales into an informed customer world now, we really need to look at relationship skills. We need to look at how we're partnering with them. And if we do this and we're really working on those nonverbal skills, really, because it's up to 92% of how we communicate is nonverbal. So if we're thinking about that and we're thinking about that strategically in a business and sales sense, how do we utilize that? How do we train on that more so we can be more present and be engaged in the people? And then they're interested in us. People are interested in people that are like them. Mm-hmm. So let's create that atmosphere for them being curious and coming into their space a little bit more and getting out of ours.
Likeability is certainly a factor in our presence. I know working with salespeople over several decades, a competitor could have a better product. And we always go in and we tell our clients, look, I can't make your product better or your service better than your competitors, but we can make your people better than the other person. And really, that's who we have to compete with, isn't it? Like the person we're competing against, we need to create a better persona or presence than they do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I always said to my direct clients when I was in direct sales, I know that our product and our service and all the things, I could tell you that we're better and we're the best in the industry, but really what matters is that you have me. I'm here to partner with you for your success, and I want to know what your goals are, because then they become my goals with the products that I have to help you with that. I think if we switch that narrative a bit, because they do, they hire you as the rep and they hire you as the people of the company. They don't hire the company itself or the product itself.
Yeah, that's right. We always called it the three pillars of value. The first pillar being the product itself, which represents 1/3 of the value the client receives. The second third is the company, its years of business and experience in the marketplace. But number three, they get you. And you do the Jerry Maguire, I will walk on broken glass for you. I will do this for you. I will do that for you. And they want to know you're committed to them. And you move from just a salesperson to that trusted advisor status, right? Where they trust you, they know you, they like you. And if they like you, they'll bring you back again. Now, the pandemic changed a lot of things and the way we sell. We moved from in-person to virtual. And I think some of that's here to stay. We call that the hybrid will be the new normal. Face-to-face is still important, still critical, still recommend it. But even as speakers, it's nice to be able to do virtual events. You can wear your Lululemons and be comfortable.
Nice knowing that brand. Good job.
Yes, exactly. My daughters, I have five daughters, so they make sure I'm well-dressed.
Of course. Yes. Now that's why you know, yes.
But it's interesting to see how you had people who had great live in-person presence, but when it came to virtual, it kind of fell by the wayside, or they didn't know where to go, or they didn't know how to communicate. And in your book, you talk about emailing and social and media and all. You've got lots of good tips and strategies in there. Where does somebody start, and how do you see the new environment post-pandemic? And virtual, I think, is going to be here. Mm-hmm. How can we work on that persona, and what should we be looking at post-pandemic from a live in-person point of view with our presence, as well as virtual?
Absolutely. I think you're right. It's here to stay. It's hybrid. If we're going to shift things from virtual into out of in-person, the first thing I always tell people is don't do anything differently that you would not do in person. So if you would not do it in person, do not do it virtually. You want to show up the same way and the same energy that you have as you would in person. Now, there's tricks to that too, because we're dealing with technology and inevitably technology is going to fail us from time to time. So we need to be prepared for that. But then if we think about that, we would never go into a presentation that's live, a speaking engagement that's live, without knowing our talk track, without knowing the presentation that we're doing. Same thing is true here with technology. So we want to make sure that things like our cameras are leveled up, our speakers are leveled up, you have a good mic on you. But then there's some nonverbal things too that we can do right away to create that energy that mimics and mirrors what we do in person. And there's three really that are key. So the first one would be posture. Mm-hmm. We're all sitting a lot now.
Right.
The posture helps us to engage, to be more powerful, to be more inviting, even over virtual. So not slouching in our chairs, sitting up, prepping that. The second one is hands. So waving. I know I've had so many people, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you said that, because I feel like I have jazz hands all the time, or they're constantly in the screen.
Right.
Yes, yes. And I didn't know if that was okay. It's okay. It's absolutely okay. Our hands are our trust factors. So we want to show those and say hello and wave right when we log in and then when we log out as well. And then the last one would be our eye contact. And I think a lot of people are better at that one now, figuring out where to look on the screen. I know for me, even it was a hard thing to figure out at first, and it caused headaches and all the things. But now that we're in it, but those are the three. So your posture, your hands, and your eyes. That's where I would start with your virtual setting.
I think that's important. So you've got to have good lighting, obviously, and you're well lit. The sound sounds good. Quality. I think it's a good example of what we should be looking at when we establish our presence. We say we judge books by their cover. So let's talk about dress, because it's different in post-pandemic and things have changed. I grew up in the suit and tie. If you look like an insurance salesman or a banker or somebody in finance, they always had a certain look to them. Or if you're in real estate or as a mortgage specialist or as a doctor, we all have a uniform. And then Steve Jobs kind of changed everything with Apple, where he was more relaxed, jeans, a turtleneck sweater. What's kind of the new standard post-pandemic? Because I know virtually we should be dressed a certain way. But what do you recommend for males and females, men and women, for post-pandemic? What should we be looking at from a persona point of view, or to dress our persona? Because that's the first thing that the audience is going to see, our customer, our client.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I love that you wrote down, we all have a uniform, and I think that that's so great. And we do in the form of, we gave the example of like hospitals and nurses and doctors and that. But we also need to wear what we really feel good and powerful in too. So remembering that, and remembering if we are on virtual versus in person, what would we wear in person that would make us really feel good about that meeting and ourselves during that time, and do the same here. Also, we want to make sure that we are leveling up a bit from whoever we are seeing. So if we feel like we just need to come in on a t-shirt, maybe we need to throw a jacket on or something because it is still a business setting. And I think that's for men and women. And I will say that I have seen a trend where we're dressed way down now.
Right.
And it's great to have. I mean, right now I have leggings on and tennis. Right. And I will say that the first time we went into virtual world, I was like, how am I not going to wear my heels? I have to sit all day and I need my heels to feel powerful. It took me a while. It took me a while to move through that. But I think that we also want to make sure that we are representing ourselves the way we want to be seen. So reminding yourself, how do you want to really be seen and known? And then representing the company too, that you're working for. That's just as important. So if you would not wear a t-shirt into an office setting, then not in virtual.
Yeah, you see lots of things online. I'll attend different webinars to see the different styles and what they're doing. And it seems like, depending on the generation, of course, you've got people wearing baseball caps, their hats on backwards, which is fine if that's your space. We always suggest, hey, one step ahead of your audience. And you mentioned your uniform. That's what gives us our confidence. So for you, it was maybe the heels. For me, it was always a suit. If I went on stage, I remember the first time without a suit, and I felt like I was just naked, like, oh man, and where's that confidence, right? Versus when we're all dressed up and we feel good, we're styling, we look good, good hairdo going, our hairstyle, our clothes look sharp. You feel like $1 million. And that goes to your intentions and it sets the stage really, right? And it's a matter of how do we do that on purpose, all right? And with purpose. And I know you talk about that. So you're in sales, you really get clear about the communication and everything that goes into the persona. This episode is sponsored in part by Rainmaker Digital Solutions, featuring ActiveCampaign. Looking to drive growth with customer experience automation? ActiveCampaign, the number one marketing automation platform for e-commerce, B2C and B2B companies, gives you the email marketing, marketing automation, and CRM tools you need to create incredible customer experiences. ActiveCampaign is the platform we use to reach, nurture, convert, and grow our business, and you can use it to grow yours. You can see why 150,000 plus businesses like yours choose ActiveCampaign to help them grow and become preferred in the markets they serve. You can also start your free trial by visiting our website and clicking on the ActiveCampaign trial link. As a bonus, we'll also give you a digital copy of my book, Becoming Preferred, How to Outsell the Competition. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am a shareholder in the company. And now back to my conversation with Amy Rezac. In your book, you talk about we need to refresh things, and you use the word refresh. And I was interested in that because we need to freshen up our presence or our personas. How do we do that? And if we're in sales, how do we step up to our audience? What are your recommendations around that? How can we freshen things up? So we're now starting to meet one-on-one again. We're going live again. What should we be paying attention to?
We all get mundane. We all get in our ways and kind of stuck in our ways. The best thing for me to do with that is to go in opposite direction. We could talk about that in multiple things. So how you format an email, what you say over a call, but how you show up on virtual. So for me, I was always dressed in pretty much 100% black when I was face to face.
Right.
So studies show that color really helps with virtual. You stand out. So if you are a sea of faces, we've all been on those virtuals where there's 50 faces staring back at you.
Right.
The ones you're going to notice are the people who are wearing color. So for me, I had to get out of my box and I had to say, okay, so I have a section in my closet now that is literally just for virtual meetings and it's color clothing because I don't really wear a whole lot of color. And that's where I went. So it's just changing it up. You still want to feel powerful and feel okay in it, but changing it up enough to where it gets you a little bit more into your present state because it's different, right? When we're a little mundane, then we just miss things. We start missing things.
I always have a hard time with color and wearing things that are bright. I was always black and traveling with black. So I had a black cashmere sports coat, black knit shirt, black pants. And my whole wardrobe was that with black shoes. And it was great because as traveling, I could spill on myself and you'd never see it. And number two, it's slimming. So, hey, it's all good. It's all nice uniform.
It's all good.
Making sure black on black. Yeah, so I like how you roll there. That's good. Now that we're getting back to some sense of normal, It's really, how do we reach out? And you talked about people who know us, they like us, and they trust us. Let's talk about knowing them. So when we set our presence up from a knowing point of view, you talk in your book about a lot of social and how to use social appropriately and that we should be on social. You've got some really good stories in there with some of your clients and people who've been in your workshops. Let's talk about how important is social to our presence or social platforms these days? And what do you recommend for business folks as the best platform?
So I guess I would equate that to associations and conferences and think of it that way. Pre-pandemic, when we were so invested in all of the conferences, they're coming back, but conferences and associations, we were there to be seen. So if we think of it that way, then we should use social to be seen and we should use it to provide value. We can show what we're doing great and we can show what we've accomplished, all those things, but also really to provide a foot forward for value for anyone who would be interested in working with us. And I think B2B, hands down, obviously, is LinkedIn.
Right.
For that, I have an Instagram too, but to be candid, I push everything from LinkedIn onto Instagram.
Right.
So I think it's wherever you feel you best fit, but also where your clients are living too. Because we think of, okay, well, if we have our business clients on LinkedIn, but they're also human. So right. Where are those humans living? Social. And then they can find you on other platforms as well.
A lot of, and good advice. There's a lot of experts that say we should be posting regularly. Mm-hmm. And we do the same thing. I'll post on one platform and push a button. And it goes to all the different platforms where our audience is. Is there a recommended schedule or cadence of posts that you find to be optimum for people to establish their presence and their credibility and authority?
I am not the marketing expert on that, but for me, I think the most important thing would be to mix it up. So not only just your posting that you're doing, but the comments that are happening, commenting back, obviously, and then following and commenting those that are in your sphere as well. Right. I think that is a huge one to do. And putting all those things together to make it work for you. I tend to post anywhere from 2 to 3 times a week, and that works for me. But I also know people who post daily and love it. I think it really is your authentic self on that,
right.
Company-wise and individually. I know other people who are like, I can't. It's like pulling teeth to do this.
Right.
So I think it's one spectrum to the other. And if it is pulling teeth, then I would say, then stretch yourself and work on that and do the uncomfortable thing to get comfortable with it. Because you definitely need to have a presence. Absolutely.
Yeah, we see so many of the clients and the salespeople, they've got their about, it's an online resume, basically. And you can rest assured that your clients or customers or prospective clients are checking you out. They're making sure they want to know what you look like, what you're interested in, because that's where the bonding takes place, right? That part of it.
Let me just kind of follow up with that too. I think too, a lot of salespeople who work under a company in a big corporation feel that the corporation handles it to a degree, right? They have a marketing team, the company's pushing things out. But to your point, those companies that you as a sales rep are reaching out to are then looking at you. And I think that we get lost in that sometimes as a salesperson.
I think so
too. We really do have to have our brand up there of who we are and our authentic self of who we are to brand ourselves as well.
And it's interesting how you look at bringing some of your personality into it and the things that you love. When I look back at some of our best clients, major Fortune 500 companies, I might call and talk to a CEO of a major corporation and we might talk for 55 minutes on wine, or I might join a wine club with them, or I have one client that he loves his cigars. So we'll chat for half an hour on cigars and I might send him one from time to time, or it could be a bottle of bourbon or whatever. And everyone's different. Each one's unique. So there's no standard one size fits all. There's some standard things we do. I like to do, from a value point of view, hand out books. So I'll find a book every quarter. And then for my top opportunities, I'll send them a book. And I know you talk about that as well in your book, sending them things. And it's really about showing up with confidence without being arrogant.
Yeah.
Presence is confidence without arrogance. So how do we walk that fine line? So we've got a presence, we've got our appearance down, we've got our value that we're going to bring to the equation. And clients, when we go see a client, they can Google our product or our service and find out all about our competitors and all about the product quicker and faster than we can even deliver it. So when we show up, what are we going to say? How are we going to act? How are we going to engage with them that's going to be meaningful?
I would say that goes back to that informed consumer age that we're in now. And we're still learning as salespeople how to adapt to that. And I think two things jump out at me on that is to ask way more questions than we ever did in the past. And we need to prep those questions stronger than we ever have in a unique, different, authentic way. So that would be one. And then two, stay curious. Stay really curious and open and wanting to learn about where they're at, what they're doing, who they are, who they're working with, all of those things. It's not necessarily a checkbox that we just run down, kind of what we used to do 15 some years ago.
Right.
Of, okay, here's my five questions I need to ask you to see if we could work together. It's not that way anymore. We do need to be curious and be genuine and wanting to learn about where they're at.
Well, and you talk about that in your book about the questions, and you refer to it as cadence, and what's the sales mm-hmm. cadence, and what's that journey, and what's that experience? And people should be mapping out. And you recommend that they should map out that journey. So it might be where on visit number one, you're asking maybe four or five questions that you've well thought out, like you just outlined. And then maybe on visit number two, you're delivering something. Visit number mm-hmm. three, you're doing something else. So you actually have a plan or a funnel, if you will, that you're working mm-hmm. through with your client. And then mm-hmm. it's, how do I add value at every step of the way so that they're happy to see me?
And so you're not just a pain, right? You're not the differentiator there is the disruptor. You're wanting to disrupt the norm.
Yeah.
Of what they get every single day. And I think too, with cadence, we need to remind ourselves that as hard as it is, because we are looking at our goals all the time and what we want to accomplish, is that we're not necessarily on our cadence with clients.
Right.
We're on their cadence. And so we need to figure out, we start on ours because we have to start somewhere, but we might do a handful of things and then recognize, okay, this client is great where they're at currently, but that doesn't necessarily mean no. And I can't tell you how many clients I work with where they will throw them in a sales cadence or an email type cadence, or they have their own that's not programmed,
right.
But then they stop after a certain amount of outreach. And then there's nothing right. after that. And so we need to dial that in and say, okay, well, we can pull it back so we can be reaching out once a month or once a quarter, bringing value as we go, but staying in front of them is key, and wanting to learn a little bit more about what's going on, tracking what's going on within LinkedIn or Google to see what's happening within their business, giving them shout outs where shout outs are due, but really putting them in that long-term pipeline, because that's their cadence, not ours.
That's right. And then it's a matter of nurturing, as you've said. So how do we nurture that relationship? And we can use all the tools available to us. So social media, we can like what they're doing. We can send them books, articles, mm-hmm. where appropriate, right? Where gifts are appropriate, mm-hmm. it might be a lunch or a visit or a breakfast or whatever it is. Networking event, training seminars. There's so many different areas. So it's designing mm-hmm. that cadence or that customer journey. And then what are those touch points? And then how do we up-level those touch points,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
So. Yep. Well, that makes sense. Now, you talk about authenticity. Let's talk about that for a minute, because mm-hmm. I think it's important, as a lot of times you see people just entering the sales force. And as you said, it's really about going in and being curious and inquiring and asking well thought out, high value questions, which mm-hmm. cause them to think. When it comes to questions, they're not all equal, obviously, right?
Right.
So you have higher value ones that maybe agitate, don't irritate, but agitate the client to where, hey, mm-hmm. maybe we should be looking at that. Versus low value questions with, who are you using? What mm-hmm. have you used before? Do you have a process for developing those questions?
Well, I don't know if it's a technical process, but I say take all the questions that you do today, list them out, and then reformat them all. I think really all it is reformatting how you're saying that. How many of us have been on a conference or a presentation and we say, anybody have any questions? We are all completely guilty of that, including right. myself.
Yeah.
That one itself is one that we have to continually be working on to revamp that so that it's open-ended, so that they feel like that they can come in and actually have a question or a statement that they want to cover. So really, it's all those tiny little things that we can adjust to really create the biggest success. And that's what we're doing with these questions, is revamping them to get the other person to actually be present in the conversation.
Right. And then it's recording those answers. And you talk about it again in your book, whether it's CRM, whether you're using whatever tool mm-hmm. you're going to use or spreadsheet, track that information. So you have that information, you can use it another time or mm-hmm. use it to ask questions and talk about something personal or on a personal level with them. So I think that's all good advice. So the mm-hmm. goal is to have them know us. And so we need to be seen. And what you're saying, the best way to be seen is with whatever social platform our audience happens to be on. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And I would say too, if we are in person together, mm-hmm. then I would say that part of knowing us, knowing right. in quotations us, is our presence. So it is also how we show up with our posture, how we show up open armed with our hands. We have all been in some sort of networking or meeting where we walk into a room and we feel like we know someone. We've all had that experience. So we gravitate to that person because we want to speak to them. We want right. to talk to them. We feel like, gosh, where do I know that person from? You can tell other people are doing the same thing.
Right.
That is posture. 100%. That's what that is. And it's a universal excellent. Thing that we do non-verbally. So I would say create that space for people to invite people in with your nonverbal as well. I do this prior to every single meeting and I geek out in my home office where I'm at today.
Right.
And I will stand with my superwoman, Superman pose and
posture, smile
at the camera, do all the things behind the scenes before I go live.
Right.
So I can open that posture space up to invite people in. I will also do that before any in-person meeting. So in my car, before I get out, because you do not know who you're going to see. I think we forget that our meetings start well before the time that we walk through the door of a boardroom. And so we want to make sure that we are in our meeting, in our mindset, in our posture, and how we are walking through the space before we ever get into that actual meeting.
And that's good advice because they've already done their homework on you. They're meeting with you because they probably have already checked you out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're showing up and you're either going to confirm their assumptions or you're going to change their thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it begs the question, though, when we come up using body language, so there's do's and don'ts, what are some do's and don'ts so we can create a winning first impression every time? And I realize that's going to be based on the individual, but how do we read that room right away so we go, hey, you know what? This is how I need to show up. And I know you talk about mirroring and you talk about matching their energy where they're at and then maybe bring them up from there. But any tips on how we can create a winning first impression?
Yes. So your first impression is split second and it's 76% of the time accurate. So if we're thinking people are judging us within a split second and they're usually correct. So subconsciously, if we're walking into a room, into a meeting, everyone that sees us walk into a room has subconsciously decided if they're going to know us and like us and want to do business with us already. So to be able to do that goes back completely to our nonverbal. And I alluded to some of these, and these are definitely things similar to how we practice everything that we do today within our sales processes. These are things to practice every single day. You could practice it. A really good place to practice it is when you're going to the grocery store or maybe the mall or to an event outside of work related things and see what happens when you take up a little bit more space with your posture. When you think to yourself, I need to stand up a little straighter. My arms need to be more relaxed. My hands not in my pocket. Women, we tend to grip our purses when we walk someplace. Let that down. That's a negative reaction. People will adverse to that. So all these minor things that we can do just within our posture and walking in, people will start gravitating to you. Test it out. I have a psychology degree, so I completely geek out on things like this.
Right.
It's similar to when you're standing in an elevator and no one talks to anybody. You go to your allotted corners and you wait for the door to open faster than it should. So it's the same type of thing. That's what we're wanting to do. And that's what we're wanting to practice. So practicing those things of really, who do you want to invite in and recognizing that your posture has everything to do with that. Your hands, they are our trust factors. There's lots of history and studies down to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'll go on a rant here.
No, that's
when
all
we
right.
were back in caveman days, we used to look for people to see if they're friend or foe. And we did that with hands.
Yep.
So we would look to see if they had a weapon in their hand. Today, a more recent study was done with TED Talks. Why do some TED Talks go completely viral and others do not?
Right.
But what they found was that gestures were twice as many gestures with the ones that were viral than those that were not. So using our hands being open-armed really does help with that trust factor. I use this a lot in my trainings, asking the room, what do we notice first when somebody walks through a door? And it is never hands. It is always face, hair, smile, something like that. But we subconsciously still as humans look for those hands to see if we trust those people.
Well, that's where the handshake came to be, right? So we greet, or with COVID, it's all been the fist bump or elbow bump, but it's that connection or forming that connection.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think hands are important. And I like what you said about practicing wherever you go, because some people are introverted and some are extroverted. Mm-hmm. And everyone that we've talked to, they always think, well, hey, I'm extroverted, therefore I'm going to be good at this. Where we actually see people who are introverted and consider themselves introverted do very well,
much better at it.
And they're better at it because it comes across more authentically than maybe too much. You know, in the past, I've been guilty of over the top, coming out too much and have to tone it down a little bit and maybe mirror them. Let's talk about the mirroring. So when you first meet somebody, so you're in a supermarket, you're trying to engage with them just to get a hello out of them. How's your day going? Some questions, whatever. But how do you approach the mirroring process?
So the first thing I would do, especially on virtual, let's say if we're on a virtual, something that you can test out, the easiest thing that you can do is hold a coffee cup. So if you have a morning meeting and you have a coffee cup, or in the afternoon, you might have a drink, glass of wine, whatever you prefer.
Sure.
So, but if you hold that, put it in the screen and then watch the room, other people will grab their coffee cup. We tend to just mirror people, and we tend to mirror people that we know and that we like already. So if we're in a group meeting within our company, you'll definitely see that. If you are in a grocery store or someplace random with people, I always start with a question that is a compliment to them. Love that. Pam Bae, where did you get that? That kind of thing. And then watching their movements and then leaning into that and mirroring that if we need to mirror that.
Yeah, absolutely. And start the engagement process, because it goes to likability, right? We like people who are like us, and by mirroring them, and then they kind of like us. And what's funny, I remember being in Montreal one time, and the Montreal Canadiens hockey team. If you show up in that arena, and it's like football, whether you're a Raiders fan or wherever, and you show up with an opposing team's jersey, you're going to get a ton of abuse, all right? And because they don't like you already, all right? Just by virtue of where you're from. It happens in our everything we do. It's in our politics. If you're one party over another, you automatically, half the people don't like you automatically. So it's crossing those chasms, those barriers, and then using the tools to bring people across with you, right? And to connect with you on a one-to-one basis. Any other tips?
I love the sports analogy with that. Bringing people in to just be aware of the next time they go to a sporting event and they're wearing the jersey, that you all are mirroring each other.
It's
commonality that's going on. And I don't think that people would necessarily think that's what they're doing, but that's what we do to show that we like each other, even though we have no idea really who those people are, but we're on this journey together. And we're here to do that. My last tip with mirroring, one of the easiest things that we can do with mirroring is within written word. So if we are communicating over email, the best and easiest, quickest tip I can give you is to, with the sign off, mirror their sign off. So if, for example, you sign off with sincerely and I sign off with best, I will intentionally change mine to sincerely.
Yeah, it's interesting how we're in tribes, right? And that's one thing nice about sports, and going back to the sports metaphor, is it doesn't matter your race, your gender, you got people high-fiving each other at the end of the game because you're all in the same tribe. Mm-hmm. And we have more in common than we don't. And we forget that sometimes in our country, is that we really have a lot in common, and you just have to look around the world and see, hey, we need this more than ever.
Right.
So in your process, we talk about being seen, then you talk about consistency with your delivery, right? And consistency is huge, because we know it takes 5 to 10 as a sales executive visits corporately for them to even sometimes pay attention. And a lot of sales professionals give up after that first, second, third attempt.
Right.
What's your feel around and strategies around consistency, and how can we be consistent? And what does that kind of look like?
If anybody here follows Simon Sinek, he has a great YouTube around consistency. And he talks about going to the gym, and how if we go to the gym one day, we feel great, come home, we see nothing, go to the gym again the next day, come home, see nothing. Well, that didn't work. We give up.
Right.
But if all of us went to the gym for only 20 minutes a day, every single day, and stayed consistent with it, we would 100% all see success. The challenge is that we don't know when.
Right.
That's,
we don't know
the
when
challenge.
That tipping point, that tipping point. Right. So consistency, that's going to be important. And then let's talk about creativity, because I know you focus on that a little bit, because each selling situation or business situation, whether it's to get financing, whether it's to get an investor, whether it's a side gig that you're working on, it's we need to be creative in that process, not just following the same what everybody else is doing. Do you have some ideas or strategies on how we can add that creativity to our process?
So I think for creativity, for me, two things that come into play are your authenticity on that side. So who you are needs to shine through. We also need to remember as salespeople that also 50% of our clients are not a good fit for us. So we tend to lean into the fact that we need this client or we want to close this deal. It's hard to do, but if we push that aside a bit and say, okay, here's just who I am. I'm going to lead with who I am. How are you doing? I'm in Denver today. And man, it is pouring rain today. I really hope that you have a better day than I do. If we lead with authenticity on that side, that will really help us with that. So I think that's key. And then two, again, going back to that staying curious, if we can really learn more about those people, if we can ask the questions of, I would love to just have some time with you to throw on the calendar, maybe 15 minutes, because I'm really interested in the success that you're having, and not pitching all the time, then really, I think those are the two key things for me on that.
Well, and it's even asking them to pitch. And I'll even use that word. I'll say, hey, listen, the goal is to get on your radar, and when appropriate, we'd like to give you a pitch of why we should do business with you. So I'll tell them why we're actually doing it. And then when it comes to creativity, there's so many different scenarios. I remember we had one of our clients, and she used to send out forks, really nice forks, and she'd send them in a little package to clients and go, I want your business so bad we can taste it. But she'd get appointments. And I'm a fly fisherman. My son and I like to go fly fishing, and particularly up here in the Great White North in the summertime. And so I used to find really good flies. So if I found that you were on a personal interest, looking at social, you were into fly fishing, I might send you an order from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, a really rare fly that maybe $4. And I'd get that fly and I'd send it to you with a little card so you know exactly what it is and say, hey, what these do for rainbows or what these do for browns or bull trout, our services can do for you. Or whatever it is. And I'd always get phone calls back. Or I'd use books, trying to penetrate that barrier, whatever that barrier is. And each one's unique. And for every client's unique. Some companies have policies. You can't give them a mug with your logo on it. In which case, we found information and knowledge works great. It passes all scrutiny. So we'll use articles or books. Hey, came across this article. And we don't care whether they read it or not. We really don't. What matters is we gave it. And that's the hit. That's the bonus there. All right,
Value. I would say too, list them out. I think we don't take enough time in prep of things like that to really know, okay, where do I need to direct myself on this? So those strategic ones, like the fly fishing is amazing. We can really be strategic in that of what are some of the things that I love that are authentic to me that I would really resonate with if I gave this out to someone, because you are going to find those connections along the way. I have a team right now I'm working on. In the very first month that we were working together, I had them write out, what is a list of you things? Who are you? What are you about? Right. And the more that we can tap into that, the more then people will see us, our authenticity comes through, but also then creating those things of value, like you were saying, those articles, where do we find those? We could even list that out. Do we read articles on HubSpot or sales websites, those types of things? Where are we finding those to trigger that? But then also there's some really creative apps out there now. I use Thanks all the time. It's THNKS. And if I have a first meeting with anybody, the very first meeting, once we're done, whether it's a call or a virtual, I will send them a thanks a latte. And all it is a Starbucks latte, and it's the QR code. And then they go to Starbucks and they get a latte on me.
Brilliant.
And it's just thanks a lot for the time.
Yeah, no, brilliant. Or
so those unique things.
I got an interesting story, which illuminates what your point is. I had a client that we were trying to get this business. They were in the communication space, and just prior to COVID hitting, and I get a phone call from the VP on a Friday night saying, you need to talk to the CEO. He wants to talk to you now. And it's 8 p.m. I've already had a glass of wine with my wife. We're watching a movie. I don't want to talk to him. I really don't. Not at this point, right? But I thought, well, maybe I better. So I give him a quick call, and he said, I'm just sitting outside, and he's in Dallas, Texas. I'm just sitting outside having a bourbon and my favorite cigar, and I've got some questions for you. I'm a cigar guy as well, celebratory and otherwise, and I like my bourbon too. So I said, hang on a minute. I said, if you're going to have a bourbon and cigar, I said, I am in with that as well. I said, I'm going to call you back in 5 minutes. And I just hung up. I didn't even give him a chance to respond. I went and got a cigar and a shot of bourbon and sat down outside with him, and I called him back up. We talked for 55 minutes about cigars and different bourbons. Okay. Last 5 minutes, he goes, so are we going to gain something? Is it going to work for us? Can you deliver? And I said, yeah, absolutely. He says, okay, good. You got the business. And I could write a book just on that, on those subjects where it's been the commonality, because we want to do business with people we know, we like, and we trust, right? And that's the heart of your message, I know. And it's the heart of selling and our presence. So we're going to work on our cadence and look at that, how that works into it. We're going to work on being consistent, being seen. We're going to work on our creativity. We're going to work on our personas, who we are, how we dress, how we come across. Any last thoughts on what we should be doing to really enhance and set ourselves apart from the competition?
Well, you just listed it all. So everybody listening, go start all of that. It's easy. It's easy, right? That's why we chose this profession. I would say last words for me are recognizing that what we do is not easy.
Right.
I think anybody in a sales profession recognize that it's very difficult to do what you do day in and day out, and giving ourselves more grace a lot more of the time than we do, and getting ourselves unstuck more. So if we're feeling heavy, I know in Q2, we tend to start feeling a little heavy with the monotony of things. Q1 is, yay, it's a fresh start. It's a fresh year. Let's get it. And now we're kind of
slogging
along. Yeah. So go back to who you are and why you love what you do, and tap into that a little bit more, and be consistent with even just jotting that down in the morning over your cup of coffee or whatever you have in the morning. Take 2 seconds. And why am I here today? Why do I do what I do today? Right. And just recognizing that and then tapping into it, I think will help a lot.
You know, one of your inspirations was Amy Cuddy in her book, Presence. Mm-hmm. And she talks the state of being in presence is the state of being attuned to and able to comfortably express our true thoughts, feelings, values, and our potential. And I know you echo those thoughts in your work. Well, Amy, it certainly has been a pleasure having you on the program. We know presence does the convincing and who we are as individuals. I know you prepare and you teach and people can visit your site. We'll have all your contact information on our show notes. And if you need a new roadmap and techniques on how to communicate effectively and have success in the sales space, people can reach out to you directly at salesandpresence.com. And I know you have lots of information for them and lots of resources and they can connect with you there.
That is correct.
Awesome. Well, we'll have all those details in the show notes for them. Amy, it's been a real pleasure having you talking about sales and presence.
It's been an honor. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. This podcast is created and associated with Summit Media. My production team is Beth Smith and Kendra Vickers. The fee for the show is that you share it with friends when you find something useful or interesting.